You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment. The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is AfterBuzz TV's Game of Thrones After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Game of Thrones After Show.
Oh, I was like waiting for the theme song to just burst in, and it was a little softer this time. Okay, so guys, I'm like still waiting for it. So guys, I'm Dave Klein, and joining me today, the lovely Kristen Snyder.
Hello, guys.
And for you Game of Thrones fans out there, fans of a podcast of Ice and Fire, you just may know Kyle Madick.
Thanks for having me,
guys. Join us once again this season. Thanks for coming on.
Happy to be back. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. And we have the lovely Autumn Chiklis with us tonight.
Hello, everybody.
Ooh, I'll clap.
Ow! Thank you.
And guys, I'm Dave Klein, and Sarah Stratton, as she said last week, is out of the country, so she's pretty far away.
Sarah, where are you?
Yeah, why is she not here? She should just be calling in. I don't get it.
She's in Westeros.
She's in Westeros.
No, she's in Essos. That's what it is.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so she went to Essos. Yeah, because I guess we'd be at Westeros.
Exactly.
Yeah. Good point. So let's go ahead and jump right into Westeros and King's Landing, the start of the episode. We have Tommen being crowned and Margaery watching from a distance, doing a little flirty,
giving a little smirk.
Yeah.
Long may he reign. Probably not.
Are we in the predictions part of this episode?
No, but like, who actually meant that? Like, that's just something they say. Like, you know,
I'm sure Tywin meant that. He's like, I mean it this time.
Yeah, I don't know, but look at him on the throne. He already looks so much better a king than Joffrey ever was.
Yes, just but he's too decent. He's too decent of a person to survive for that long, unfortunately.
Mm. But Joffrey was too indecent, so
there's got to be a balance, right?
There's got to be some sort of balance. Does Tommen have it?
Basically, he doesn't have a voice, and he can be easily puppeteered. So that's what he has, and I think the council will rule.
You already see so many people pulling his strings, like Tywin's already gotten his claws into him, and Margaery, obviously, last episode, and Cersei. I feel like Cersei's kind of given up.
I'm actually surprised by a lot of Cersei in this episode. She has a chat with Margaery, and she kind of, like, is very, like, all right, Margaery, let's hook you up with Tommen. Like,
yeah,
I'm surprised by this.
She said that Joffrey would have been her nightmare. And is it by chance she was awoken by this tragedy of losing her son? Because it seems like people sort of wake up to life whenever they're, like, submerged in pain. It kind of wakes them up to reality. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, what step of the denial phase is she in? Or in the,
yeah,
the step of grieving.
Yeah,
like,
right.
She was in denial right at the beginning, and now she's accepted.
Now she's, you think you go through anger first. You have to get through anger, and then
you kind of go back and forth between the stages. But it's interesting that she has kind of, at least in this episode, seemed like she's kind of become a bit submissive, but that just doesn't sound like her. So I feel like in later episodes, we're going to see her fire come back in some way, especially with the trial coming up.
Mm. Well, I felt like she was manipulating people. Obviously, she was talking to her father, who's a judge, talking about, you know, of course, throwing in there how Tyrion's definitely poisoned their future and not just her son. And then also, she just happened to walk around the gardens with Oberyn today. So,
get it? Right. We poisoned their future.
I'm punny.
Dizana saying he too is shocked about the way that Cersei was acting this episode. But so Margaery also she's claiming she hasn't even thought about being the queen. I thought it hasn't even crossed my mind yet.
I'm sure Cersei sees right through that as well. I mean, no one in their right mind
could
just say, oh no, I've never thought about the Iron Throne. That's not something that anyone ever thinks about.
Like this soon? No.
I'm sorry there wasn't a huge eye roll by Cersei at that point. Like, I was just expecting epic.
Yeah, I was surprised too. Like,
well, I think what happened is she was kind of in, like, I'm playing the game mode. And then as soon as Margaery was like, I don't know whether to tell you, call you my mother or my sister, then we got the eye roll.
Yeah.
And I think that was like, okay, now I'm back to I hate my life.
Well, that was just too much of an obvious move on Marjorie's part. I mean, mm-hmm. when we were watching, the first thing I was thinking is, if you're going to play this game, you have to know who your audience is. And Cersei is not the person to brown nose like that. I don't know what to call you, my mom or my sister. Ooh, that's just not the right audience for that.
She does that with everyone.
Yeah.
But did you guys think there was any truth in it? I mean, she already saw one son die, and now she's talking about her second son who has the throne and her legacy and everything. And she's really going to Marjorie, and she's like, you know what? He's going to need help. He's going to need this. I can't do it alone, everything. And then later on in the episode, we see her worried about her daughter as well. And so there's got to be some truth in this.
Well, that's the thing I was talking about, being awoke, being, like, woken by a tragedy and sort of, like, hitting that reality mark. I just feel like that's something that's happening to her right now.
Simfire in the chat saying, I think she's playing everyone, playing the game. But, I don't know.
That's always
odd
part
in this episode to me. But
if she's playing the game, she was doing a fantastic job. Because even the viewers are like,
best acting by Cersei yet within the realm of the game, that is.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you guys kind of touched on the fact that she kept bringing up her children, and there was kind of this theme of protecting her children at this point. And she obviously at the beginning of the episode mentions how, you know, you never love anything as much as you love your first child, and obviously he's dead now. So you have to wonder whether or not this was kind of an awakening experience for her, and if now her, after everything that she's been through and she's had all of this power, if her kind of priorities are going to shift a bit, and maybe, possibly, not sure. Mm. Doesn't sound in character, but at the same time with the show, you never know.
Yeah.
I mean, hopefully she won't go unchanged by this.
Yeah. And then we see her kind of, I mean, I don't know if give up's the right term, but when Tywin brings up Loras later on, when you're going to marry him, she's like, fortnight later.
Well, I think, to me, when she said fortnight later, though, I was like, give me time to figure something out. It's like a fortnight could be any, I don't know, to me it's like any given time she's just saying a fortnight.
Well, he called her on it.
That's just kind of what I figured with her saying it like a fortnight later. Like, even with the marriage, like, it'll be in a fortnight.
Yeah, well, I felt like that was
like stalling time almost.
I felt like it was a respectable amount of time for a wedding in medieval times or in Westeros times where,
we got a week, all right.
You can't have the king get married and then a day later be like, I'm going to try and trump that with my own wedding. Like, it just...
No 77 courses this time.
No.
Can't do that.
No, I felt like I felt like she was behaving so well to convince the judges that, you know, Tyrion is responsible for Joffrey's death. I think she was just preparing.
Right.
Makes sense.
I also found out that she had admitted to Margaery that the things that Joffrey did shocked herself, and she doesn't easily get shocked. So that was I was just surprised she admitted that. But we do get that scene that you're talking about, Kyle, with her with Tywin. And really, as you were saying before we started the show, a lot of this episode really has been following Cersei around and seeing what she's been doing. And we find out that another surprised me that Tywin actually entrusted telling Cersei about the Iron Bank and all the loan and debt. Because to me, Tywin's always someone who keeps everything to himself to plan and connive everything. He always seemed like he didn't trust Cersei with anything before. Like, he basically flat out called her an idiot last season. Mm-hmm. So I was surprised that he was willing to open up to her about the fact, more so, that King's Landing's been out of gold for 3 years.
Oof. Well, I think he was specifically saying that Lannisport was out of gold.
Well, yeah, Lannisport. Yeah, thank you. That Lannisport's been dry for 3 years.
Yeah. And which in turn, I guess, they're kind of back in King's Landing anyway. Right. But tomato, tomato. What am I talking about here? Oh, shoot, I lost my train of thought. Somebody take over. What's going on?
Well, now I lost my train of thought.
Oh, no, what was it?
Obviously, they need to marry for money, and they don't like the Tyrells. It was rivalry all along. Like, they're not friends. They're enemies. Mm-hmm. They're keeping them closer. It's obvious what's happening. It's just for the money.
Yeah, and he did tell her this right after what we were talking about earlier. When are you going to marry? Oh, fortnight later. Mm-hmm. And then he reveals this kind of, hey, look, there's a reason we're doing this. Yeah. So he's obviously entrusting her with this because it's necessary, and I don't think because he doesn't trust her, he needs to entrust her with this particular information.
Mm. And really, who else is he going to talk to? His two sons are pretty much gone.
Yeah,
like, Jamie's already out of the family, and Tyrion's going to be killed pretty soon, so.
Well, he'll talk to his brother.
Cersei's the only one left.
His brother! Come on!
Kevin, where is
Kevin? He needs to talk to Kevin. Don't stop talking to Cersei! Stop it! So, but the thing with the Tyrells, though, really, I mean, this is how medieval weddings always worked, in a sense. It was always like, you marry rivals, you marry people for power, you marry people for money. That's really how any medieval, and which I think George R. R. Martin took a lot of inspiration from, any medieval marriage would have worked. So, I mean, at the end of the day, it's a marriage that should benefit both of them. So, I think that's the thing that I would take down as now is, like, Tywin, both Tywin. Both the Lannisters and the Tyrells would be at an advantage by this marriage. And even though they've been rivals for however long, once you unite those families, it just makes it one major, giant, powerful family.
Because you both are taking on that major debt.
Yeah. Well, that major debt's King's Landing's debt, specifically.
Are the Tyrells aware of the debt?
He made it sound like they weren't. I think Elena knew about the debt in a couple episodes ago.
Elena was? Okay.
Elena talked about the debt with Tywin a couple episodes
ago. Right before the wedding.
Yeah. So they had a little combo about that. So it seems like they do, but they want that power, you know? It's all about that power.
Well, they know. I mean, the Tyrells are such a – they have so many – the crops and everything. They're such a green castle and whatnot, mm-hmm. and their crops and everything and the trade and what. They are so wealthy that they really do need that help. And in turn, they get a queen on the throne. So
Simfire and DXZana on the chat – or DZana on the chat saying they both like that – they explained in the show why they need the Tyrells. So it's good that they get that explanation, or we get that explanation as a viewer.
It is. Absolutely.
Definitely something we needed. So following Cersei further, we get her entreating with Prince Oberyn. And to me, at first, why wasn't he in a whorehouse? What's with that, Prince Oberyn? I mean, like,
he's
what?
He's writing poems.
He can do that
sensitive.
In a whorehouse.
There you go. He is a multifaceted individual.
No, I don't know about you guys, but when I write poems, I need to be outside in the garden.
Well, I need to be, like, while I'm making coitus with girls. That's when I'm writing my poetry.
Okay.
Oleana's gone now. So
I'm a multitasker, okay? I multitask. The more you know.
Nice.
So, but at first I thought Cersei was going to him. I mean, he likes both sexes, so, you know. But anyways, I thought that she was going to him specifically for the sake of, to try to get his trust, to make him judge harshly against Tyrion, but instead she really ended up going towards the Myrcella route.
I don't agree with that at all. She acted like she was so caring about her daughter, and I have no doubt all that's true, and she misses her, but it was more so a ploy in my mind to just kind of sneak in, oh, I have no doubt that Tyrion is the murderer of my son.
Well, she did do that connection, as you said, definitely, where she was like, your sister, my son, same thing happened. So there's that connection.
Yeah. She's trying to build that bond with the judges so they'll sympathize with her side in the trial. Is this what it's all about?
Yeah, once again, in the next, a lot of this with Cersei has been kind of like, I don't know, the foundation of what is going to be kind of the house. And next episode, we're going to see exactly what all of these little, like, chess pieces she's planted here are going to, like, move forward. So I'm really interested to see exactly if she's totally full of it like she normally is, or if there is actually a level of truth in it.
Is there no one out there who loves Cersei?
There are plenty of people who love her, but maybe not for this.
Are there?
They're so mad at what we're saying now.
I like Cersei for the entertainment.
Yeah, that's
well,
what
no,
I mean,
I like Joffrey for the sake of he was a big villain.
Exactly,
he's a bad villain. He's easy to root against, but it's not a likable character.
Not at all.
So it's
you need those, though.
You need those, especially in a show like this, but. So she's making all those connections, as you said, and building off. And do you guys, she asks about Dorne, essentially, and Prince Oberyn saying that, well, we don't treat little girls poorly in Dorne, and Cersei not at all believing that. And what do you guys think who haven't read the books? What do you think of Dorne, and do you think he's telling the truth? What do you think?
I think in his mind, they probably aren't treated badly, but what's treated badly, it seems like everything's different in Dorne, and I want to think of it as, like, this rainbow unicorn place that they describe it as, but it's... I mean, it's probably not. This is just not that kind of world. So she may be happy. I don't know that he's definitely lying about that, but I don't think that all little girls are protected there. It's
well,
just,
she
like,
even says everywhere in the world they hurt little girls.
Yeah.
So yeah, I totally agree. Where I would really like to think that there is one place in this universe that he has created that is really decent and good, but somehow I kind of doubt that. I kind of doubt that it
And he's writing to his sad daughter or whatever, his daughter who acts up or whatever, and she lives in Dorne, so she's obviously messed up for a reason, just saying.
Well, look at her dad. I mean, I feel like he's not a very supportive father. I mean, like, maybe he's a very supportive father. He's probably he's just not there very often.
Yeah, he's all the way out in King's Landing. He doesn't need to be in King's Landing. He's just there.
Also, the importance of naming your children after someone that you don't burst into tears and get really angry every time you hear their name.
Yeah. That was a little, I was like, why would you do that?
Yeah, exactly. Right? If it's something that you remember fondly, that's one thing. But if it just makes you really angry viscerally every time you say your name, you're just dooming the kid.
He was running out of names. He's like,
yeah, he does have 7 daughters. Come on.
He's running out of names at that point. He's like, well, 7 or 8. Ellie has another name.
It was 8. Okay.
Yeah. And even Cersei called out.
As far as he knows.
She goes, well, but maybe that's why she's so angry. Like, what?
Fifth daughter. Yeah. I mean, like, so many names I can come up with. But I mean, I guess like maybe he named her that in her honor and then hoped that it would break that cycle of his anger and bring some joy to his life.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, it happens all the time. Somebody will pass away and then they'll name a child after him.
Right. Absolutely. Westeros Charlie is saying, I wonder why Oberyn didn't mention his other daughter is even more troublesome, maybe? I don't know. So,
yeah, he's got 8 of them. What's up with
yeah,
that?
He's got a lot of them.
Got a lot of poems to write home.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and travel over to Essos and Meereen, where we've got Daenerys finding out about Joffrey's death and that she's also got 93 ships from Dario. So.
Oh, yeah. That's nice.
I mean, that's not a bad gift. Just saying. I like ships.
I'd be cool with it. I'd be down.
The way to Kristen's heart is to get her 94 ships. You got to show up.
Yeah.
You got to show up, Dario, there, you know?
I felt bad because the ship could carry 9,300 people, and apparently she has an army of 10,000. It's like, what are those 700 people just going to do afterwards? Like,
not die.
But who do you leave behind? Do you leave behind Unsullied, or do you leave behind Second Sons? What do you leave behind? That's my question.
Tough one. But she's not going to leave.
No. She decides to be a ruler the way a queen would be, and especially after finding out all this news from Jorah. So Jorah tells her, like, hey, so remember those two cities that you freed and of the slaves and you were, like, the savior? Well, all of them are back in the shitter now, and everything sucks just like it did beforehand, like you did nothing. There you go. Happy birthday. It wasn't her birthday. In case you thought I was being serious. I know everyone thinks I spoil everything, so that was a spoiler. Spoiler, it's her birthday!
In the book.
You're gonna find out next episode.
In the books, when this happened, it was her birthday. No.
Yeah!
It would have been a bummer. But it's interesting because, I mean, she is obvious. First of all, I think she's perfect. She is my spirit animal. I love her tremendously. She is the, like, supreme badass of the world. And the thing that I do love about her, and obviously one of the reasons she's such a simpatico character, is the fact that she is kind of the ruler of the people. And she prides herself, and not only prides herself, but kind of her whole character base is that she is for the people to free them. And the fact that everything she has worked for has kind of gone to shit. Obviously, with her character, it only makes sense that she would want to maintain that kind of, not only the first of all, because she needs to maintain the respect from the people that she's conquered. How is she supposed to rule when everything that she stands for is kind of going away?
Well, like Jorah said, she could just get on those ships. I mean, the liberation obviously didn't go well, but it's like, who would attempt these things anyway? I mean, she's kind of taken on, you know, this huge agenda that, you know, most people would not even begin to attend to. I don't know. It's just like, she's done so much, and the fact that she's now not going to go to the seas and she's going to rule over these cities, I mean, it's a nice thought. I don't know that it's going to pan out, but maybe hopefully that'll gain her some followers and a new audience, because I know especially Dave was getting sick of her, so.
What can I say? I'm not a fan of Daenerys.
I'm not a fan of you all of a sudden. Oh.
Look, I feel like she acts.
I'm glad I'm on this side of
the
table.
Me too.
Like, I feel like in the recent episodes and recently in the recent seasons, she's been acting like her brother, really entitled and all that. And the only reason we forgive her is because she's freeing slaves. And if you take out that aspect of her, she just acts incredibly entitled, and it annoys me. So that's why I don't like her very much. But it's cool that she's taking responsibility here. Although I'm curious to see what audience will think, because a lot of people are like, "Where are the dragons, George? What's up? Where are the dragons?" Yeah, so I'm curious to see for a lot of people.
They were in the preview for next episode.
They were in the preview. So I'm curious to see if people are going to be excited that maybe she'll use that and take over a kingdom here, if they really want to see in Westeros. So I want to see what you guys think about that watching. And Lord Bond saying, there's going to be a queen training montage.
Rocky style?
Rocky style, montage. Lord Bond asking, how do we feel about her putting off Westeros' plans for the time being? And I actually like this term for her taking responsibility.
Yeah.
Personally.
I agree with that. If they want us to gain some respect for her, we kind of need to see it happened. her do something. I mean, she's already taken on this huge agenda, obviously, mm-hmm. but it's nice, especially to see her agree with Jorah and kind of listen to him, because at this point, she's been ignoring everyone who's been trying to give her good advice. So that part already, I gained a little respect for her this episode.
Yeah.
And I mean, this show, when you're talking about entitlement, this show is riddled with entitlement. Everyone's entitled.
It's a good point.
My great grandparents once ruled this place, and therefore it is mine. But that is pretty much the basis of the show. I mean, so when it comes to entitlement, the thing that I really like about her is the fact that she tends to be a woman of her word, and that's the reason she is going to take responsibility for this. And that's the reason I think she is badass, and I disagree with
her. Well, I mean, entitlement to me, that bothers me. She's never, outside of being born, she's never even been to Westeros, and it's just like, it's mine! I deserve everything! And it's like, that's a bit much to me. That's why. But, you know, Dizana totally on the chat agreeing with you, saying, Dave, we hate you for hating Danny. So,
well, she's been surrounded.
I totally get it, though. I mean, that was my first reaction, too. But at the same time, then you kind of have to ignore everyone's entitlement. Mm. And
well, I mean,
so
I guess when I look at the characters I like a lot, I mean, a lot of them get screwed over, like Ned Stark. But, I mean, like, I like Arya Lannister. She doesn't act at all entitled. And she's one of the breakaway characters who doesn't act like that. So that's why I enjoy Arya. I enjoy Tyrion because even though he is entitled, these things, he doesn't get them, and he has to work. I don't know. He just doesn't act entitled, even though he is entitled. So that's why I like Tyrion a lot. But let me go ahead and talk about some chat stuff about Oberyn. So back to that. Westeros Charlie saying, I wonder why Oberyn didn't mention his other daughters. Oh wait, hold on. Sorry. Elliot, get down. Saying Ellie is the oldest daughter, by the way, so he hadn't used up his names yet. And I think in this episode, maybe I think in the episode he mentioned it was his fifth daughter.
He did say it was his fifth daughter.
So I just want to clarify that. But Simfire then saying, give the guy a break. A ton of estrogen he has to deal with in that household.
That's true. So,
like he cares. He'll take anything. Estrogen. He's all for it.
He's all for everything.
There you go.
He's a laid back dude. Other than when it comes to his sister. He's a hippie.
There you go.
Other than when it comes to his sister. So let's go ahead and move over to the Eerie.
Can I just say, on the Daenerys thing? I'm really anxious to see what the viewers think about that, because I feel like her saying that line, I'm not leaving, is a viewer's worst nightmare.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Everybody's been waiting seasons. Like, my friends that are only watching the show are like, when is she going to get there? When is she going to get there? When is she going to get there? And all of a sudden she's like, I'm not going. I feel
a lot of people
probably broke down tonight.
But she will.
But I agree. That's exactly.
And then I'll cry.
But yeah, I agree. That's exactly why I was curious to see what people think about it. Because, I mean, to me, like I said, I actually like this because it gives me a reason to respect her. Yeah. And there were actually some people in the chat saying the same things, that they gained some respect from her out of this, and as you did too, Kristen. But I really think, like you were saying, like a lot of people say that's why they watch the show. They're waiting for her to go to Westeros with the dragons. Yeah. So. We'll see what people think. I'm curious. But let's go ahead and move over to the Eerie, where we've got Littlefinger and Sansa traveling together through the Bloody Gate.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I loved that when he said, know your strengths and use them wisely, and one man can be worth 10,000. Because I feel like Varys is worth like 10,000 men, because they know their strengths, they play everyone, they manipulate everyone. That's why they're so powerful, and they're like everyone's quote-unquote friend. Mm-hmm. So that line kind of like summed up him as a person to me.
Nice. Yeah.
I just want to talk about the special effects. Can I talk about that? The Eyrie is easily the most sort of stereotypical fantasy castle in this world.
Yeah, totally.
And it's up on that perch, and it hasn't been able to be, no opposing force has been able to conquer it in over 1,000 years. And it's just so beautiful. And I kind of went into a Lord of the Rings sort of world.
Well, I was also thinking, like, you look at it, and it's supported by two rocks with a crack in the middle. It's like there's literally, like, part of the castle is built over a giant crack.
It looked like it was on an arch or something.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it was beautiful. I loved it. Like, the special effects in that little take were really cool.
I just think I'm glad I wasn't the castle builder back in the day when they were building that castle.
I'd like to know the history.
History
of the Eyrie. I think that would be really cool.
That'd be really interesting. I totally agree with you. Yeah, Eyrie's a really interesting place, definitely, when you get down and dirty with it. But down dirty with it, you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Speaking of dirty, we got Elisa.
Oh,
my God.
So
cray.
Yeah.
Oh. And you know what? It's funny to me. Okay, so we get Lord Robert, Lysa Arryn, meeting up with everybody. And at first she was being so kind to Sansa, and as a book reader, I was like, what? Lysa, you're being kind? And they totally took it and turned it right back to how it was for us book readers. I'm just like, at first I was like, they really are changing things this episode. What's going on? Lysa's being nice and like...
No, she was not. Yeah.
But at first, like at the very beginning with Sansa, she's like, oh, welcome.
Yeah, right. She had a bipolar thing going. It had to be bipolar, yeah, right? Because she was happy and sad and moaning. It's not like it was calculated.
I think it's the whole marriage thing, too.
She's just a little excited. A little excited about it.
She was slightly excited to be wed.
Well, to be wed, I mean more like the Sansa experience. She was very excited to be wed.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, but nothing seemed like every conversation she had with Sansa didn't seem calculated. It was kind of just spur of the moment. Whatever she was feeling sort of went off on that tangent, and she seems kind of the opposite of Littlefinger. Littlefinger's very smart and calculated and thinking about everything, and she's just sort of, oh, you love me, you don't love me, oh my god, what's going on?
Well, that makes her really dangerous.
Go ahead.
No, just like I said, it makes her a very dangerous person to have with him, paired with him, because with that kind of opposition, he's so calculated and everything is, you know, put perfectly into place. To have someone who's so sporadic and could do something like what we saw at any moment, she could totally blow everything for him with the wrong move.
Well, and we get those giant reveals this episode. Big reveals.
She monologues and starts saying everything.
She just goes and starts blabbering it off.
No one, pretty much.
So let's go ahead and list these really important ones. So we get Jon Arryn, which is her husband. Right, so Jon Arryn, who we know before, this was what started the entire show off.
The whole show.
Everything. The first season was this letter that Catelyn had gotten from Lysa about Jon Arryn dying, and Robert needs a new hand, so he travels up north because that was the hand of the king. Turns out it wasn't the Lannisters who did it, as she told them, and what made them mistrust the Lannisters. It was her who did it all along. She killed her own husband. So really big reveal. And that was all through Peter Baelish. Yep. Or Littlefinger. Littlefinger planned it all out.
Littlefinger. Wow.
So huge reveal there.
How
many people called that one of the viewers? I'm curious. How many people called that one?
I don't think anybody was even thinking about that.
No, I totally forgot about it. So like, wait, what? And I think that's probably how the rest of the viewers are.
So when you're like talking about like string pulling, this is from way back long ago. Oh, yeah. Peter Baelish has been pulling strings. So even when I was reading it, I was like, what? What?
what just happened? What is going on? You go flip back to the first chapter. You're like, oh my god, that's what it is. Okay. It was, wow. I can't believe they came right out with it. It was...
I'm amazed I'm curious your thoughts, Callie, because like, to me, they've been moving really quickly with reveals this season. Yep. This was just another one that they revealed a little bit later on, and I'm just like, wow, they're really coming like quick with these big reveals.
They were coming quick, but you know, I think it's one of those reveals where if you stop and think about it, you're like, oh my god, this is really something huge. But if you're just kind of like going with the show, you're like, oh, what do I care about Jon Arryn? Like, that was so many seasons ago.
That is a great point, because like, if you really pay close attention, it's a huge reveal. But for most like viewers, I think a lot of viewers, and it's fine, you forget a lot of names because there's so many names, and it sticks with you easier if you've read or like we're doing this after show. But for a lot of people who just watch week to week, you do, like as you said, forget a lot of those little details. And really, this is incredibly important.
It is. It is. And it sets up like this whole – Littlefinger sort of is now center stage where you're like, wait a minute. He got this whole he ordered Lysa to kill Jon Arryn.
Yeah.
It's like, why?
As a viewer, it kind of shines a spotlight right on him.
Why did that happen?
Confuse everybody. Like that's as he said, that's confusion, bitches.
That is the big mystery now. Why did Littlefinger have Lysa kill Jon Arryn in the first place?
And then why is he taking Sansa at this point and telling her everything? And, you know, there's a lot of questions with Peter Baelish.
There we go.
Is it for love? No, I don't know. I don't think that just doesn't sound like him. I mean, call me totally anti-romantic, but it just doesn't sound like he would be taking care of Sansa just because he loved her mother. That just doesn't sound right to me. It doesn't ring true.
Love or obsessed?
I mean,
even still, he's too calculated of a guy. He's come this far. I mean, especially with this reveal, there's got to be some greater plot behind all of it. I guess people can say that like love is the most powerful force ever, and not to like mock that. I'm all for that.
Look at this.
She hates love. Just coming out like such a cynic. Like I'm so cynical. No, it's not about. It's just it's so incongruous with everything else that he stands for. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, all right, what's going on with you?
Well, we got that like last week or the week before when they were like, you know, what is it that you would risk for? I'd risk everything for everything. So he wants everything, and I guess guess that's everything. I'm, like, trying to imagine exactly what he's going after with this grandmaster plan of now we know the whole beginning of the show was because of him. So it's, like, if he is taking the center role, it's, like, we need a motive, right? We need to know what the end game is. Does he want the power to rule? I mean, what is everything to him?
But on the fact that he started off the events of the first book, we have Ryan Willis on the chat saying everything that's ever happened is Littlefinger's fault. And Lord Bond saying, no Littlefinger, no Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. So maybe everyone who hates him should thank him for giving us the show.
No, what's so interesting is because I personally do not read the books. I very much want to, but at the same time, I'm going through that like struggle of I wanted to ruin. Blah, blah, blah. And I was talking to a friend of mine who is a book reader last week, and they're like, "Oh my god, you know Lord Baelish being one of my favorite characters." And at the time, I was like, "Really? Of all the characters, you pick Lord Baelish?" Mm. And now I'm starting to get it. I'm sorry. I apologize, but there's more to that than meets the eye.
There is.
He's an interesting and creepy cat.
And we start getting a lot of his backstory involving the Tully girls,
right? Yes,
which happens here.
There's, which is great. You go ahead.
What is this love circle, square,
triangle,
pentagon?
I guess,
what is going on? We've got. Like, so it seems like Littlefinger really liked Catelyn.
Yeah,
young, just a little bit.
Catelyn, but Lysa was jealous of her, but Catelyn was engaged to be married to Brandon Stark, and Brandon beat Littlefinger in a duel, and it was
what is going on with all this? Let Littlefinger die, so Catelyn actually saved Littlefinger from dying from that duel. But then Brandon died, so Catelyn married his younger brother Ned Stark. But mainly the main thing here, though, is that during this entire thing, Lysa was absolutely in love with enthralled with Littlefinger and thought she should be his.
Yeah, you could tell she
and like absolutely him. And she admits to us, and we get through the scene that they've had sex before marriage, so we don't know.
Dun, dun, dun.
He took
the show's gone too far. I'm out.
Okay.
I'm done with this show. I can't handle these things. Like this is a That's
okay.
All right, Dave's out. All right, who's taking over?
We should probably talk about the rape scene because people didn't get enough of it last week.
We got so many complaints because of talking about the rape scene again last week. So,
let's talk about it again.
I find it funny too, this whole scene with my favorite character, Lord Robin, or Robert.
Oh my god.
No, but then just like come right off the bat, like, I heard your mother died and your brother died.
So much tact. So much class.
Got his head chopped off. And then Littlefinger's nice and brings him a glass bird. And I imagine that took a lot of time to make a
nice
glass
bird. Make it fly, Kyle.
And then she's just like, he's like, whoop.
Okay, can we just talk about a little foreshadowing? Like, that's not going to be the last thing we see going down that hole by Robin.
What's going down the hole next?
I don't know. Probably a person.
I
don't know.
I can't get my mind out of the gutter when you guys were saying that. I'm sorry. Sorry. But, okay, so we get right away, though. I mean, basically, in order to shut up Lysa, Littlefinger's like, all right, let's get this. He starts revealing all these giant reveals. He's like, let's get married now! Yeah, let's do it tonight!
She's ready to go with it.
Well, he didn't want to get married right now. He's like, let me shower, and then the door's open, and we're ready for the
She had the septon waiting in the wings.
Yeah, that was a lot.
That was crazy.
But it's basically just like, the only reason he agrees to do it that day is to shut her up. He's like, okay. Not what he was planning, per se. And we also get why she was so nice to Sansa. Which is, it seems like her plan and what she wants is for Sansa to marry Lord Robin. And while it seems like in the way she makes it sound to Sansa, it's like, this is great for you. You're going to become the Lord of the Vale. I mean, really, though, Sansa's the bigger get here when everyone thinks every other Stark is dead. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like, under everyone's mind right now, the only person they think is alive is Sansa. So, of the Starks. So that's Winterfell right there.
And a lot of them don't even know at this point because she's just kind of gone MIA to most of the rest of the world. Right. So.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I meant Elaine. I'm sorry. By the way, her name that she's going under for you guys, because just in case they're referred to her as, again, is Elaine. That's her, like...
That's her undercover name.
Sansa
is
Elaine.
Yes.
Yeah.
And can we... So, to check in with Littlefinger again, he is now Lord of Harrenhal, and he's Lord of the Vale now.
Yeah.
So he owns two castles.
And this is nothing before this. Like, literally nothing. Like, he rose from being nothing to being... because of Lysa rose him up. Well, anyways, I'm just like, uh-oh, wait, I don't know if I'm able to say what I'm saying. But
I don't know what you're saying. What are you saying?
I don't see what I'm saying. But point is, though, he's risen really far. So that's the point. He's risen really, really far. And, I mean, basically, like, because of Lysa now, he's become the Lord of the Vale.
Yeah.
So Lord of the Vale, because he's married to her now, and as you said, Lord of Harrenhal, because of the gifts that he got after the Blackwater.
Yes, the Blackwater, because he was the one who brought the Tyrells onto the side of the Lannisters. Mm-hmm. So that's why he was gifted Harrenhal.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, while I guess a lot of people might think this whole part with the Vale was slow in terms of no action, to me, I think this was the most, I'd say, important part of the show. Mm-hmm. With, I mean, it was a really, of this season, it was an incredibly important part of the season.
Yeah.
So.
I think this will be a scene that the viewers later on, like a season from now, are going to be like, I need to rewatch that episode. What were they talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, that was just really important stuff from season one that they retread.
I feel like Lysa, though, she needs to go. Like,
she's
going to
die.
Yeah.
She's going to die. There's
probably
no
down
way.
The hole. She's going to go flying.
There's no way that she lives with the amount that she knows and the amount that she blabs. There's no way that she survives in this world.
Why are you saying Littlefinger would kill somebody? Would he kill his own wife?
He doesn't seem like the person who gets his hands dirty to me.
You know what? Robin would probably kill
The reason I was saying that was because of the crossbow scene where he killed just like a couple episodes.
Oh,
he killed somebody with a crossbow?
Wasn't that him or was his man who killed Dantos?
It was his man.
Oh, it was his man. Okay, then that was my mistake. I was trying
to relate it back. Bloody, but someone's hands are going
to
get bloody.
Yeah, I was trying to relate that back to Dantos, so that was my bad.
He delegates all the killing. That's what he does.
I mean, I would kind of like to see Sansa do it, actually. Mm. I would like to see Sansa kill
Lysa. Oh, does she have the nerve, though?
She doesn't, and that's why I want her to do it.
I know. Something needs to happen to that poor girl. I mean, I started off watching, like most people, when I started watching the series, I could not stand her. I'm like, shut up, you're so whiny, stop. But at this point, I'm just, the amount I feel sorry for this poor girl. Something needs to happen to her other than just complete and utter hell.
Well, she needs to take control.
She does, because she does nothing. But like to her defense, everyone she's ever known and loved is dead, and she's never been taught to do anything other than just kind of like sit properly. So sure, but at this point, you kind of have to take the Arya Stark, or maybe somewhere in the middle, and kind of start listing names before you go to bed, if you will.
But I mean, at this point, it's like, what's she gonna do? Because before she was like, I mean, I get that why people thought she was whining all that, and I feel like, honestly, in the book, you get her thought process a little bit more, so she's a little more easier to deal with. But, I mean, the thing is, like, really, like, she was with the Lannisters, and if she did any wrong move, she was screwed. And now, like, she's under this situation, which is just this new situation with Littlefinger and Lysa, and it's just, like, she's just going from one bad place to another. Yeah. And it's just, like, there's not much you really can feasibly do. So, for anyone who's mad at her last season, too, it's just, like, well, what's she supposed to do?
Yeah.
Well,
I was talking about whining. I'm talking about, like, episode one, where she was like, no, but I want to marry Joffrey because he's so good-looking. Like, that's what I'm talking to.
Yeah.
That's what I'm speaking to.
But look at that blonde hair.
Look at that.
Oh, he's so luscious. Dreamy.
Probably not any more worms in that shit. But anyway, I'm just saying, like, we get those moments with the camera focused on her so heavily, and we can just imagine what's turning in her brain. And soon something has got to manifest, and she's got to start playing a little bit, whether we can see it in her eyes. I mean, even still today with Lysa, she was like all crying and like, no, he only loves you. Like, you know what? Speak up to that bitch. Right? Mm. Like, do something. Say something a little like edgy that, you know, shows people that you can't just step
on me.
Yes,
I'm pregnant.
Man, I would have got her good.
The
issue,
the thing with her, and you were touching on this earlier, is what is she to do? Because she's not so much of a commodity where they can't just kill her if she speaks up too much. And she's watched systematically everyone who has made any kind of, like, splash get their either head, like, on a spike or, well, most of the time on a spike, frankly.
Yeah.
But, you know, everyone's dying around her who has made even the tiniest splash, so I can understand if you're kind of picking up patterns why she would try to keep her head down and glide below the surface, especially, like, considering, look at what Littlefinger's doing. All of the people that have survived that she has kind of been seeing have laid low. It's the same thing in King's Landing.
I just feel like you can only be suppressed so long before that turns into something else and the cap you know, explodes off.
I don't know. I can slowly see her starting to grow a backbone. I feel like last week on the ship with Littlefinger, where she was kind of asking some good questions of him and whatnot.
That's
a
good point.
You can see it. I think it's starting. I hope it's starting, too, because I'd like to see Sansa really step it up.
Yeah. And on your note, Lord Bond saying, what did Tyrion say last week? Sansa isn't a killer. Not yet, anyway.
Exactly.
So we got that quote from Tyrion. Thing,
yeah.
And Tyrion knows her so well. So let's go ahead and move over to Arya and the Hound. So kind of our comic relief for this episode, really.
This whole season.
This whole season. And
chicken.
So they're Arya's reciting her death list, keeping the Hound awake at night. I just love
like we
it.
All do.
Yeah.
As we do when we go to bed, just name all the people that we want dead.
I mean, I'm glad at least like Arya does it too, because I felt alone until I watched the show. So.
Glad you found a support system.
Yeah, it's nice to see that. So just it's so great though, like after the Hound, they have this bonding moment about the mountain, and then Arya lays down. It's like last person, one person left on my list. Down.
Talk about someone with a backbone. My God. Okay, I don't know if you guys know this or if you guys have talked about this, but I found a statistic saying that Arya is the fastest growing child name in the U.S. I'm not sure how I feel about that, considering what's been going on.
Really?
But yeah, everyone's naming their kid Arya. I don't know if I would do it. Maybe if I got like a pit bull, I'd name it Arya or something. I don't know about naming my child.
I heard Khaleesi was.
We talked about that.
I almost named my new car Khaleesi, but then I didn't. I was very close to, though, but then I figured that if she dies...
It's the queen of all cars, the mother of cars.
Yeah. I can't... That's the other thing about naming your kid Arya or anything. I just couldn't do it just in case like she dies terribly, and then every time I get in my car, I just superstitiously...
Yeah, you gotta wait until the show's over, and then you can safely decide.
It'd be like Oberyn naming his kid after his dead sister.
Exactly. I love Arya, though. For me, one of my favorite books, and I said this in a couple seasons ago, but one of my favorite books is the Song of the Lioness Rampant series by Tamora Pires, and it's the first book's about Lana, the First Adventure, but the main character... It's a great book. I know, I'm sorry to read. But the main character, this is my favorite book since like I was in third grade, and it's been for a long time, but the main character is a girl just like Arya, so if anyone enjoys Arya's character, I recommend that book series, because it's a really good series. It's written in the same style as Harry Potter, but it's like it's basically following someone like Arya before Harry Potter was made, by the way.
Cool. Good recommendation.
So but we get after this whole great scene, the Hound waking up looking for Arya, and Arya's water dancing. And there's the great background on Macy Williams. So as we mentioned last week, we actually had an interview with Macy, a phone interview, if you guys want to go check that out. But she's talking about she talks a little bit about that and what she had to do for those scenes. But she actually has a dancing background. And we asked her if that helped her a lot with some of these movements. And she said it does, because it's the same thing with the choreography and all that. Mm-hmm. But, so that her dancing background probably actually helps her out with these movements that she had to do. The water dancing.
Nice. And she...
That's actually how she got her role on Game of Thrones, was through dancing, in a sense.
I've seen a YouTube video of her in, like, some sort of group in a mall, like, dancing.
Yeah.
Like,
flash mob.
Hip-hop style. She's, like, that's dancing around. Excellent. And she also learned to use the sword with her left hand. I think Arya's left-handed. I believe she's using the sword with her not main hand.
Oh, that's great.
Cool. So
with the character's
become hand. Ambidextrous.
Yeah.
That's always something I would, like, wish I did with everything I do, and I'm just too lazy to.
I am ambidextrous.
Are you?
Mm-hmm.
I'm jealous.
Aw. Lots of tension over there.
Oh, jeez.
Hate.
Jealousy. Admiration.
It's like Cersei talking to anybody.
Yeah. So many crazy emotions going on all at once, so...
We're getting a lot of talk about the mountain this season. Oberyn's been mentioning him quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And the Hound and Arya, they've been really bringing him up quite a bit. We haven't seen him in a while, I don't think. So.
But he's definitely going to come to the surface to be killed, at least.
Yeah.
By someone.
If nothing else.
If nothing else, either by Arya.
Can you imagine the Hound and Arya? I mean, excuse me, the Mountain and Arya having a fight?
That would be awesome. Hound would probably hold him.
I don't know. The Mound's got armor and a really big fucking sword. Let me just throw that out there.
Yeah, no, that was hilarious. That was crazy. That
did you guys think that Arya thought she was actually going to stab him?
I was thinking that. I was wondering that, too, because, like, she went for it.
That's a great question.
She really committed, too, so I kind of feel like she had to have thought it.
Did she think she was going to go right through that armor?
Or at least she's like, might as well try.
Yeah. That. Yeah.
I just think that she thought, for one, he wouldn't let her. It kind of seemed like he was going to teach her some things, or, like, he would defend it. And I don't know that he thought that she really would. So they were both got, I think, caught off guard by each other's reactions or non-reactions.
It's a bit of a YOLO moment.
Yeah. He's like, oh, might as well go for it.
YOLO.
Yeah. He's like, he really wants...
Hashtag YOLO.
He really wants the money from me, so I guess I can try to kill him. He's not going to kill me back.
And then she can go run back to the farmers and give them back their money. But I just... I enjoyed...
And eat more pigs.
Aww. And eat more... And eat...
The stew.
The stew.
Rabbit stew, right? But I also liked the whole Meryn Trant conversation about, like, what? You mean the best swordsman in the world was killed by Meryn Trant?
And he didn't have a sword.
And he didn't have a sword? The best swordsman in the world didn't have a sword?
That was amazing.
That was a great combo. I love the Hound. He's hilarious. But let's go ahead and move over to another side of, another group traveling, which is Brienne and Podrick Payne, another comedy group.
I was just going to say, they're kind of trying to take the reins from Arya and the
who
Hound.
Who wins the comedy duo?
I mean, it's always going to be the Hound and Arya, but it was funny here because Brienne sort of releases Podrick of his duties and he won't leave her alone, much to her dismay.
Well, he's not good at really anything, as it turns out. I mean, as we're all
like, well, he
is good at one thing, if this show has told us anything.
If Brienne and Podrick slept together, then maybe she learned his true skills. But since that's not, that doesn't seem to be happening at the moment.
Yeah, or ever.
He's just, it's more because he's been serving Tyrion, and then when you're serving someone like Tyrion in a castle, everything's kind of given to you that don't happen in travels. Like, if you're a squire during the middle of a war in a battle, there's a lot of skills you'd have to learn, but while you're serving in a castle during, not really a time of peace, but while they're just in a castle, you don't have to do all these things like learn how to skin an animal before you cook it.
Yeah.
Which I was thinking, like, that seems so obvious to me, but I wonder if it really isn't obvious if you're just not, like, if you don't grow up, like, learning something like that.
It wasn't obvious to me when all of a sudden it caught fire and I was like, oh, why that rabbit's burning? And I didn't realize it until Brienne came over and she's like, why didn't you skin it? And I was like, oh, the fur.
You know, it's because he wanted it well done.
Yeah, he did.
Really
and
well done.
Crispy.
And crispy. That's how I like it. You can't deep fry it. You don't really like the oil, so you gotta come up with something to make it seem deep fried.
Well, it seemed like Brienne actually gained some respect for Podrick once he told her the story about how he stabbed the Kingsguard with a spear in the back of his head.
Big time.
Oh, you mean you put a point through someone's head? Like, how'd you do it? I put the point through their head.
Yeah, he was like, it's so obvious. What do you mean, how did I do it?
Maybe you're not so useless after all.
No,
but then she lets him do the armor for her, so.
But the Kingsguard are supposed to be the best knights in the realm, and I think that's where the whole, oh my god, how did you do that kind of question comes from, because they really are, and I feel like it's sort of fallen into disarray where Joffrey, he let Barristan go, who's now with Daenerys, and he brought on the Hound, who's not a real knight, and all this, and the Knight's Guard used to be the best of the best, and now they're just kind of this motley crew of schmoes. And so I think Brienne, who is even though she's not a knight and she's not a man, obviously, she's more knightly than so many other characters who pretend
she's
to be knights.
She's so badass. She's the other one whom I love in this show. I mean, there are so many of them, but her specifically, I feel like she kind of goes under the radar a lot when people are talking about the show, but she really brings some level of decency and nobility that has been seriously lacking for a show that should be all about nobility.
Right. She's definitely like a Stark, and that's why I think so many people fell in love with this show, and I think why it was centered on that family to begin with. So it's nice to see glimmers of that surfacing through Brienne's character.
Yeah, considering all of them are dead.
Well, it's also the fact that Brienne ended up working for Catelyn, too, who's a Stark, and she acts a lot like Starks, and now she's on this quest to save a Stark. But I found it interesting that we get Podrick telling her about the Kingsguard trying to kill Tyrion, and I'm wondering if that's ever going to come into play, because that's actually a really, like, when you really think about, why would a Kingsguard attack Tyrion?
The Hand of the King at the time, right?
The Hand of the King at the time. So I'm curious to see if they're going to play Brienne having knowledge of that out, or if it doesn't matter because she's traveling. So
that's a great point, though.
And so many people are always trying to kill so many other people, and there's so much betrayal, you kind of have to wonder, oh, what's important?
But not to Brienne. It's very black and white to her.
That is true, but that's going to, the black and whiteness kind of goes away really quickly the more you watch the show and the more you kind of live in this world.
It's nice that we see, like, the Hound kind of teaching Arya that black and white goes away, because we're sort of in the audience's seat where we're learning that as well.
So, Also with this, too, Brienne trying to get Pod to leave, and he won't leave. And that also really just has to do with where's he going to go? Because we know as an audience he can't go back because he might get killed if he goes back. So it's just like, this is all he has.
Yeah. And he can't fend for himself, that's for certain.
No, he can't fend for himself unless he has a spear to put through someone's pointy end. let's go ahead and move forward to the far.
Pod is good with his spear.
Any spear. So, let's go ahead and move far, far north. Far away to the far off north. Where the Craster's Keep.
More spears.
Craster's Keep. So how do we sequence into this? Locke is looking. He's behind a tree, right?
Right. That's
how
so we break Rast, into well, Rast is like off on his own. Like, and then Locke chases out after Rast. Like as Rast leaves his non-post, basically. And Locke finds his goal, which is Drugol, which is Bran.
Yes.
And decides not to tell... not to tell John about Bran because his mission is going to be to steal him for himself.
Yeah, he actually tells a smart lie to keep John away from him. He's right, like, "Oh, yeah, there are dogs in there. And we don't want to have them barking at us, so let's stay away from that."
It is a good lie, actually. Like, yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
smart. So, yeah, we end up then coming to the scene where Bran, Jojen, Mira, and Hodor are locked up with such a Carl, the greatest, great, nice guy. Good guy. Good guy, Carl.
As if you didn't hate him enough already, he's got to do another rape.
Yeah, so. Another rape. And you're going to have to watch, brother.
Oh, that was so creepy. And, I mean, I was looking at the staging of it, and she was literally, like, her feet were, like, hanging on Bran. And I was like, is this going to really happen right here? Is this?
I was kind of wondering, too, if they're actually going to go through with it. But even with, like, Bran doing his prediction of everything... But they.
Oh, you mean Jojen?
Or Jojen, thank you. Sorry, Jojen. I mean Jojen, yeah. So Jojen doing his prediction. But right on time, the Night's Watch is here to save the day.
Bam.
But how amazing was that scene setting by Jojen saying, you know, I saw you. He was like, oh, do you know what I'm going to do to your sister? Carl said that to Jojen. And then he's like, no, but I saw you die tonight. I saw your body burn. And I saw the snow cover your bones. And that was just like amazing.
It was
confidence.
Yeah, it was so cool to actually see because you never get like those kinds of moments of triumph when suddenly, you know, you set up this really horrific scene and more often than not it plays out. It was kind of nice to see them set up this horrific scene.
That's a great point.
Oh boy, here we go. Here's another rape and mutilation and we're going to have to take it. And then, no, the Night's Watch come in, and it's very triumphant and wonderful, and, you know, the people you want to see dead kind of die, and that was kind of nice. You gotta do that once in a while, you know what
once
I mean?
Once in a while in this show, once we need some justice.
Hey, Joffrey
When Joffrey died, I have to say I was with a bunch of my friends, and everyone just kind of started going, no, there's no way they're gonna.
Wait! That's too good!
Wait! It's exciting.
Nice.
It's... funny too, really this season a lot of like, and this is why like a lot of people who after the Red Wedding I was like, just wait a little bit guys, don't stop watching the show, please don't watch. And now there's like so many more positive moments happening. But Lord Bond on the chest saying if Locke weren't such a douche he would be a badass, and I agree, man. That double dagger play was awesome.
I think he got a lot of fans. I mean, on our podcast we found out that a lot of people were like, I like Locke, I
really?
Like him now. Last week
I mean watching like, him with watching the way he handled those like two dual knives, that was cool. I was like, wow, that's badass the way he's fighting. I like that.
The dual knives was
that was Locke.
Well, Carl was
or
using
Carl sorry Carl, was Carl not Locke. Yeah, Locke would. Yeah, true about Locke. Sorry, I went to Carl just because I like the dual daggers. Totally different character.
Dual daggers.
I'm like, doesn't matter who's doing it.
If Carl wasn't such an asshole, he would be awesome because of the dual dagger thing. But yeah, Locke is a really total badass because of the sneaking thing happening.
He is. He's very cunning. It's kind of cool to see. Yeah, he
was.
Yeah, can we talk about
him in past tense?
Can we talk about Hodor? Yeah, Hodor, the badass here.
Kristen predicted this last week. That was her prediction.
Thank you.
Well
your
done.
Prize?
Thank you. I predicted the necklace thing too, and like Sarah was like, "No, you're crazy."
Oh yeah, so we had a reader on iTunes. I'm sorry, I forgot who said it on iTunes, but a reader on iTunes was complaining like. There's one girl on the show who acts like she hasn't read the books, but she definitely has because she keeps spoiling things. So Kristen has not read the books.
I've not read the books.
She's not spoiling things. Just predicting things. So.
I'm a writer, and it's just like I know that when they throw those things out there, it's there for a reason, and I pay attention to that. So there you go, guys.
Lord Liar. Bond on the chat saying, too bad Locke got Hodored.
Hey-o!
Oh. door.
So
that made me so happy.
That was a cool moment, and we've seen Bran do that before. He warged into Hodor, I believe. Was it a Queen's Crown? I know that's what it was in the book. I'm not sure if that's the name of the place that was in the show, but he did do that earlier in a previous season.
So we then, after this, though, we get Bran making this big decision, Bran and the group, like, all right, we gotta, like, to not meet up with Jon Snow, because as Jojen points out to him, hey, if you meet up with him, you guys are going to head back south, and he's going to try to protect you. Jon's going to try to protect you. Mm-hmm. So he ends up deciding to free the direwolves, head north. Mm.
To find the three-eyed raven by the weir tree.
Yeah.
And we get the great reunion with Ghost. So Ghost is finally back in Jon's life.
Yes, I was so glad they did that, because I've been wondering. I was like, why? Jon hasn't mentioned Ghost at all. It's like, you grow up with this wolf, your dog, and all of a sudden he's like, oh, I don't care, whatever. And finally they were reunited, and I was like, oh, he does care. He does care.
Yeah, I love this. I love all the direwolves. Direwolves are great. Mm-hmm. So great to see them back where they belong with the Starks and the Snow. But the Starks, as long as it's not Ramsay Snow, that is. So with that said, that kind of wraps up this episode. So, Kristen, do you have any predictions you want to say?
Quick prediction. You know what? It looks like Tyrion has to... It looks like, you know, they're all against him, and they're like, do you want to confess? So obviously it looks like they are putting him up to die and that he was accused in the trial, but I think he's going to say something and Jaime's going to come in and save him or something like that. Like, he's not going to die next episode. Mm-hmm. That's my prediction.
And what about you, Adam?
I actually happen to agree. I thought you were about to say you think that he's going to go, and I was going to disagree, but we happen to agree. I think that he's I don't know. I don't think it's the end for him yet. Or at least maybe that's wishful thinking.
But I do not think that it's the end for him. The judges are all like...
Oh, they are. They definitely...
Against him.
He's going into that trial. It is a farce, as Jaime put it. But at the same time, I just don't think it's the end for him.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, thank you again so much for joining us this week. Once again, I'm Dave Klein. You can find me on Twitter at TheDaveKlein. That's KLEIN.
Autumn, where are you at?
Oh, I am on Twitter as well. Autumn Chiklis. AutumnChiklis.
Kristen Snyder at Cinematic Escape on Twitter, and you can check out my blog, Cinematic Escape.
And I'm Kyle Maddock at Mad Canard, like the duck, and a podcast of Ice and Fire. Check it out if you've read the books.
All right, guys, we'll see you next week. Later.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.